Hey, this is Justin Barrett, the voice of Jacques Brunet from Treasure in the Royal Tower, and you are listening to the River Heights Buzz podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the River Heights Buzz podcast. This is episode 128. We're your hosts. I'm Alexa.
And I'm Candace.
Welcome to movie month, folks.
Yeah.
The whole month of April, we are talking about the rest of the movies.
Yeah.
So this week, we're kicking it off with the first of four from the 1930s movies with Benita Granville. Tonight, we're talking about Nancy Drew Detective. And this is clearly, you can tell, back from the 1930s.
Mm-hmm. I was not familiar with any of these actors in these movies because these movies are not like my genre of movies. I'm not super familiar with like this era of movies. So I did a little light Wikipedia-ing as one does. And I was pleasantly surprised to find out a little bit about Benita Granville. And I had no idea that she was actually, her and her husband both were posthumously named Disney Legends back in 2011. You know, as our listeners may or may not know, I'm a big Disney adult. And so I'm kind of interested to see some of her other work. So I thought that was kind of a cool tidbit, but like I said, not familiar with really any of the other individuals in these movies. But Alexa and I were talking before we hit record, and I was telling her that my husband grew up watching kind of like the old 30s and 40s Western movies. And so he recognized the actor that played Nancy's dad, Carson. So he was kind of familiar with some of these actors. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, obviously, totally different kind of genre of movies.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
And I think that like, it was just a few years earlier that these books started coming out. So there wasn't, I feel like, much time between the first publications of these books versus when these movies started coming out. Mm-hmm. Because this movie that we're going to talk about tonight came out in 1938. So that's only like at least 8-ish years from one, I think, want to say.
Based on, and I know it's not 100% accurate all the time because you can edit the pages, but I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for this movie right now, and this is based off of Password to Larkspur Lane, which was released in 1933. So, yeah, not a big gap in time, but I mean, you know, I guess they just kind of realized the gold that they had in the Nancy Drew series even then and thought, you know, we need to capitalize on this and run with it and see what happens.
And it's funny that I had watched the movie before you, Candace, and as you're watching me, you're like, we were messaging each other and you're like, didn't cover this before?
Yeah. I was like 15 minutes in. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Seems
this storyline sounds suspiciously familiar.
And I was like, yep, it was Larkspur Lane.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, and like I said before we started recording, it's very hard to try to separate movies that were so different from today's type of movie. There are times in these recordings, and I don't think that they're necessarily bad versions that are on YouTube, because that's where I was watching, and I'm sure that's where you were watching as well, Alexa, was on YouTube.
I actually have the DVDs for these movies.
Oh, okay, cool. I was watching on YouTube. So if anybody is interested, listeners, they are available on YouTube for watching for free. I think that it's just a product of its time, in that I had some areas where it was hard to understand what was being said. And I think that that was just kind of how it was. back then. I think they were doing really the best that they could with the technology that they had. And so I was kind of just, you know, along for the ride, so to speak. And I was trying to make the best of it, and trying to not compare it to movies now that are so ridiculous and high tech and whatnot. You know, I was trying to appreciate it for what it was, because I'm sure back then it was a real feat. Because, I mean, if you think about it, like, and this is really jumping ahead, but I mean, there was car chasing, there was an airplane flying scene. I mean, there was a lot of action that was happening. And this is 1938. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You can't knock them for trying. Like, I think they did the best with what they had.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, based on, like I said, The Password to Larkspur Lane, which came out in 1933. And fun fact, was actually released on November 19th, which is the day before my birthday. Thought that was pretty cool. But other than that, I don't know if you have any other beginning information.
I do have something.
Okay.
We have an interview coming out Friday.
Okay.
That I did by myself with, I guess you could call him a contortionist. I guess like those people that just move their bodies in any kind of way. I got to talk to Troy James. If you don't know him, he was a Sin Eater in season 4 of the TV show.
That's so cool.
He was really nice to talk to, but I will say we were even talking about it too. He was nervous, which I could get, you know, first time doing something like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, that's coming up. Yeah. That's coming out Friday. And yeah, stay tuned for that.
Cool.
All right. I think that's all that I've got. Are you ready, Candace?
Yeah.
To ready. Dive in?
Yeah.
I have a description, and it says, wealthy Mary Eldridge decides to donate $250,000 in 2020 purchase power that would be $4.5 million. I'm going to do the conversions because it's been 4 years since that's been mentioned.
Yeah, and in this economy, I'm sure it adds a bit to it.
Yeah. To her alma mater, where the teenager Nancy Drew is a student. When Mary doesn't deliver the check to the lawyer, Carson Drew, Nancy's father, and disappears, it seems as if she has backed out of her original intention. And Nancy's classmates turn on her, annoyed that she had gotten their hopes up about getting a swimming pool for their school. Nancy sets out to find out what really happened. Along the way, with the help of her neighbor and best friend, it's questionable, Ted Nickerson, she deals with the kidnapping of her family's doctor, a slow policeman, and an injured carrier pigeon. The release date was November 19th, 1938, and the running time was 1 hour and 6 minutes. I do have the conversions.
Okay.
For $250,000 back in 1938 to now in 2024. I've got Canadian and American.
Okay. Too,
so I can do the difference. For Canada, $250,000 in 1938 is worth $5,050,270.27.
Wow.
For the U.S., it's $5,468,386.52.
Isn't that crazy that just in 4 years' time, it goes up that much?
Yeah.
Now, granted, I'm sure that that's, you know, because of inflation in today's world, because like, you know, right now inflation is crazy, but that just blows my mind.
And that's like every time I do these conversions, especially in today's time, it always includes inflation because the prices are just like constantly going up. And I'm like, it's just a pain in the ass. I'm sorry, I'm just saying it.
It is. It's true.
So.
It's true. And another thing that I think is really important, if our listeners do decide to watch these movies, is it's really hard. And I had to keep telling myself this as I was watching this movie. I had to keep reminding myself that there were a lot of differences in this movie and like even the book version that this is based off of. And I had to keep reminding myself that the movie was not taking liberties with the story, because at this point, Nancy Drew, in and of itself, is still so new that it's not really taking liberties. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it hasn't been around long enough for them to stray away from the story when the story is still really being written, if that makes sense. So I had to tell myself they're not telling it wrong. It's still being written at this point, and that's okay. So, anyways, let's just dive in. How about? I was going in fully blind. I haven't watched any of these movies before. I knew they existed. I don't think I realized that they were Warner Brothers,
I
but
was the same way. Like, I hadn't watched these movies before, so I was pretty much going in like not really expecting like what we watched, you know?
yeah, like I
So.
didn't know what they were about, knew nothing about them, didn't know who was in them, didn't know any kind of premise, nothing at all. The movie opens up outside of a school for girls, which I was kind of in my head, I was like, so do they live there? Do they just go there during the day? Is it just a regular school? Like,
We don't get much information.
yeah, is it just a school for, I mean, if it's just a school for girls, like, cool, you know, whatever. But like, I don't know why, but in my head, I'm like, I'm thinking that they live there, but maybe not.
Then it showed, didn't it show later that Nancy actually was at home?
Yeah, which also, that house is huge. That staircase is huge.
Like, I expected Nancy's house to be big, don't get me wrong. But not this big,
Not
like a
that.
mansion.
Like that house was huge.
You could probably fit like at least two houses in there, almost, I want to say. So.
It was very big. There's a group of like, I don't know, 8 or 10 girls that were around, you know, late teens, our average age of Nancy of, you know, 17, 18 years old. And there's an older woman that's there who used to go to school there named Mary. And she has some kind of older gentleman with her. And she's telling the girls that she's planning on donating money to the school. And she says that she's going to be donating $250,000. And the guy interrupts her and says, no, it's $200,000 that you're going to be donating. And she's like, no, I changed my mind. And he like immediately shuts up and like looks angry.
And she had every right to change her mind. It's her money. She can do what she wants with it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm
So.
like, in my head, I'm like, okay, so like, are you her financial advisor? Like, who are you? How do you fit in this equation?
And when he was kind of talking to her about it in that part, he seemed almost like he was going to be up to something. So.
Yeah, and it was just awkward because it was in front of all the girls and like the teachers there or like the people that were in charge of the school. It was just a weird kind of, it was a short kind of encounter, but it was awkward. It was uncomfortable. So the girls just kind of don't really pay attention to it. Mary doesn't pay attention to it. And she asks the girls what they plan to do with the money. And they immediately say they're going to build a swimming pool.
It's like, of all the things that they could build, they pick a swimming pool.
I laughed out loud when they said that because I'm like, how much is that going to cost? Like, that's not that much money. I mean, because she was like listing off like a science building, a fine arts building, you know, like actual important things. And they're like, no, we want a swimming pool.
And they all said it together.
Like, there had been some serious discussions about this. Like, they were getting a swimming pool.
Yeah.
So.
And it's almost like, obviously, money back then was tight, just like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, just like now, back then, they could have had so many things come up, like, problem-wise. So how far would this $250,000 go?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they probably would have needed more money, I would think.
Yeah.
But who am I to say? It's her money, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Like, they could have, like, built a nice new building. Maybe for, like, I don't know, student activities. And then if they had anything left over, maybe, like, set up a scholarship or something for girls that have good grades but maybe need financial assistance to go to the school if it's too expensive and they can't afford it or something like that. You know, that would be a good use of donated money.
Yeah.
Instead of just a swimming pool, but what do I know? Anyways, enough about the swimming pool. I was just like, what in the world, but okay. The scene changes and all of the girls are at Carson's office now. I'm like, okay, so this is a whole, like, this is a group project to get this donation check at Carson's office. And everyone's there waiting. And Nancy got Mary this nice, like, silver, they call it a fruit bowl, but it's like, it's almost like, I guess you could put fruit in it. I would use it like a centerpiece kind of bowl. You could put something nice in. Silver, you know, like real nice. And then there's mention of Nancy wanting to be a lawyer when she gets older, which was kind of random, but okay.
And in all these, sorry,
no, I was thinking back then, I was like, it's kind of ambitious for the 30s, but okay.
And in these movies, Benita Granville was only like 15, 16.
She looked young.
She was really young.
Let me look. What year was she born? She was born in 1923.
And this movie came out 1938.
Yeah, so math is not the strong suit. Hold on, 1938. 15. Yeah. So probably 14 when they started filming. 14, 15 when they started filming. So yeah, she's young.
And she's driving a car.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
I'm going to look that up now, honestly. Because I know in the U.S. now, it's what, 15, 16 you can 16. Get your permit? For your permit?
16, yeah. Your permit? Yeah. Well, at least in Kentucky, it's 16. 16 to get a permit, and then you have that for 6 months. And you have to do, it's so, so ridiculous. You have to do 60 hours of driving to get what's called your intermediate permit or intermediate license, where they put a sticker on it. And then you have to have that for 6 months before you can get a full license. Yeah. And then you can have other people in the car with you.
Yeah.
It's real weird.
But yeah, for at least where I am, it's you have like your G1, G2, and full G. And you have to have, for your G1, you have to have a licensed driver of more than 5 years with you for like a certain amount of time. And you had to do a written test. For your G2, I think it was like a driving test. You had to take lessons for a while, but you couldn't drive at night, but you could drive by yourself. And then for the full license, it was like an actual driving test. You got marked on it and you either passed or failed for obviously every single one.
Mm-hmm. Parallel parking is the worst. While we're talking about her driving, let me just say the two car things that got me in this movie. One, and this is skipping around, but at this point, I feel like this movie was really chaotic. Especially like from the middle to the end, was very unhinged feeling. So when, like I said, this is going to be like jumbled and crazy. When the pigeon got away and Ted, which again, this was a choice of calling him Ted instead of Ned. When he goes and gets the ladder, did you realize that he hits the car with the ladder? I cringed so hard when he did that. So that was one. And then two, when Nancy was driving closer to the end, did you see that she hit a tree?
I think so.
It was a tree that kind of had like the bark that was kind of coming off. She
Yeah.
like rubs up against it. And I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like I looked over at Mark and I was like, oh my God, it's like me driving. Yeah, Ted knocking into the car with a ladder, which that also brings me to another point. I feel like his character was there. It felt almost like comic relief because it was goofy. And did it describe them as best friends? It did not feel like a best friend situation.
Throughout the all these movies, it was like best friends dating, and like it does not seem like they're friends at all, or like
No.
even going out on dates.
No, there's like some tension there. Like there's some kind of flirtiness, but there's also like a I can't stand you kind of thing too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird dynamic. Maybe it's flirting, I don't know. But he was more goofy than anything. Not the like dreamboat that is described in the books, you know what I mean? Like it was a very different kind of depiction of him, whereas I feel like the way that they portrayed Nancy was a little bit closer, except for she was kind of helpless at the end, which you had mentioned to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very strange. So, anyways, like I said, it was like group project field trip time at Carson's office, waiting to get this donation check. And the suspicious guy from earlier comes in and he's like, so change of plans. Something came up and Mary had to go and I don't have a check and that's it. I gotta go. Bye. And we're like,
And everyone was like really annoyed and disappointed by that.
And then they all like turn on Nancy like it's her fault.
Wasn't it her idea? She was like, yeah, and the reading part of the description now, she's like, and Nancy's classmates turn on her, annoyed that she had gotten their hopes up about getting a swimming pool for their school. So I guess Nancy was the one like bringing up the idea to them.
Why are they so hard pressed about this freaking swimming pool? Is what I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, are they trying to start a swim team?
Honestly.
Maybe this needed to be called, instead of Nancy Drew Detective, Nancy Drew trying to start a swim team. Like, I don't understand.
Learning how to drive.
Yeah, like,
Oh, in the last movie, I think. But like in all the movies, she had such trouble driving, honestly.
She needed some lessons. But then again, I mean, if they're filming these back to back to back, I mean, 15, 14, 15, 16, like, it's understandable.
Yeah. And I just read it here that since 1926, the minimum driving age for motorists in the US has been 16. And she's not even 16 yet.
Yeah, and listen, I'm 32 now, and I'm not the best driver in the world. I'll be the first to admit that, but I'm a better driver than I was as a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
There's that. But yeah, anytime that she was driving, I was just like, oof. And then when Carson was like, hey, can you drive? I'm like, Carson, no, just drive yourself. Like, don't have her drive you. Just don't. It's okay. You can do it.
My question is, did she even pass the driving test if she took one? And if she did, because clearly she did, like who was grading her?
Don't know. Like, did she slip him a 20 or something? Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like she had to have failed.
Yeah.
Like, she was sideswiping stuff. Like, it was, and it was noticeable, too. Like,
yeah.
Which made me think, oh, they must have filmed most, if not all of this, in, like, one take.
Probably.
So, which, I mean, like I said, you know, product of its time, do what you can with what you have and get it done however you have to get it done. But still, like,
yeah,
it was questionable. Now that all of Nancy's classmates have turned on her and are now mad at her that apparently the swimming pool is not going to happen, Nancy now wants to prove that something fishy's going on, pun intended, and that Mary had every intention of doing this donation and that something's going on with her.
And Nancy does not want to brush it off like it's nothing.
No.
And everyone else does. And I'm like, at least Nancy's like sticking to it and be like, I'm going to just check this out, figure out what's happening, you know, yeah. So.
Yeah. And another major difference is even Carson is like, Nancy, like, they're there, like, you know, go play with your dolls, you know, you don't worry your pretty little head about this, it's not a big deal. And Nancy's like, no, I'm gonna figure this out.
And even like the Carson that I always remembered, he's always been supportive of Nancy, you know, going and following leads and stuff, but obviously being saying like, be careful, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously in these movies he's like, no, just no, don't do it.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Not supportive at all. Almost to the point of being dismissive of what she says, which is very much the opposite of how he's portrayed in the games and in the more recent TV show and in the more recent movies and in a lot of the books. So it's very different. So that was a big difference.
Is it just me or did Captain Tweety bother you?
Yeah, because he was really like condescending and talked down to Nancy like she was a little girl and she knew nothing about anything and she didn't need to worry about what was going on and, you know, they would handle it and they would handle more important things and shut up.
And he almost like most of the time that he was talking to Nancy, he was always like, little girl, come mm-hmm. on, little girl. I'm like, she's not five.
Yeah.
Okay. She's a teenager.
Yeah. He said little girl several times. And I was like, shut up.
And Carson did that too a few times too, I noticed.
Yeah.
I'm like, I get that, you know, Nancy is his only child, his only daughter. Like, I could see that once in a while. But if it's like multiple times back to back, like, that would bother me.
Yeah. It was super annoying. Nancy leaves her father's office, and this one got me, and I messaged you about it when she was driving away. She's driving past that doctor, and they holler at each other out their windows, and it was so fake, because you wouldn't hear each other that clearly. Dangerous to do that and drive that closely, you know. Just
and assuming that the cars were, like, so loud back then.
No.
Even louder than now.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't hear it. Just the whole thing. No. And so they drive past each other after saying hi. And then Nancy's watching in the rearview mirror because, you know, curiosity killed the cat. She's got to see what everybody's doing at all times. And he essentially, like, gets kidnapped, like, right behind her, right in full view.
Yeah.
And she whips it around because, you know, that's not going to ruin your transmission or anything, even back then. You know, so she tries to follow. Conveniently, the license plate is covered in mud, so we only get part of the license plate. Isn't that always how it is? But then Nancy blows a tire.
Yeah.
So,
of course she does.
Foiled again. So scene changes, and then we see the Drew household. And like I said, it's like a freaking, like, southern mansion. Like, that's, I can't get over the staircase. It was huge. And we see the housekeeper, who is not Hannah, but Effie.
When I heard Effie, I'm like, I automatically thought, like in the book, Hannah was injured, threw out her back. Effie's there to just, like, step in for a while. But no, Hannah's not even in it at mm-hmm. all. Not in any of the movies. It's Effie in every single one of the movies. I feel like it's even kind of mentioned that she's like, I quit. I'm done. I'm out of here. And I feel like Carson has almost been like on the verge of firing her multiple times because she's doing such a crap job.
Yeah, like that was another thing. Like he, again, this is skipping around. He treats her like the help and not like family, like how Hannah is treated in the books. And I didn't appreciate that.
I didn't either. So, you know.
I mean, you know, I understand that she might be your employee and you might pay her a paycheck, but you don't have to talk down to her because she's still a person and she's taking care of you and she's taking care of your child and probably has been for years. Since, you know, you're a single parent. So, you know, don't be a jerk, maybe. Just a thought. So, yeah, didn't like how that was portrayed. So, Nancy comes in, tells Carson what happened with the car and what she saw. But this was one scene where she was so, like, breathless and whatever. Like, the whole scene was, like, lost on me at that point where he was even, like, slow down. I can't understand you. Take a deep breath. Blah, blah, blah. Phone rings. So that was the perfect time for her to like calm down because I really couldn't understand what she was saying that whole time. It was like a rambling one-on kind of sentence, you know. Phone rings. It's the doctor for Carson who wants Carson to come to his house to talk to him. And then Nancy finally is able to tell Carson about the kidnapping that she saw. And so Carson takes her along with him to the doctor's house and they get the whole story about what happened. The doctor's fine. He was blindfolded, taken to this location where he had to see this woman patient who had a dislocated shoulder. He thinks that she's being held against her will. And it was at this point where I was like, I'm familiar with this story.
I think that this is the part when we actually started messaging each other.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Nancy is hearing all this. She's convinced that it's Mary because, you know, Nancy's always putting two and two together. So she thinks that, you know, Mary's been drugged, being held against her will. She has every intention of giving this donation, but she's being held, you know, and she can't do it because she's being held. And they talk a little while longer and get a little more details. Carson asks Nancy to drive home. Horrible mistake, Carson, but you know, okay.
Did you notice that it didn't look like they were wearing seatbelts?
Yeah.
Now I don't know if it was like seatbelts like now they go across like your chest.
It could be lap belts.
That's what I was just gonna say. It could be just like the seatbelts across your lap, but still, like, that doesn't seem like all that safe for like your upper body to me. I don't know.
Many streetcars had lap belts in the 1930s, but few people used them. These early lap belt models kept passengers from flying out of the car, but did nothing to protect their heads or torsos.
Like, how is that safe?
It's not. It says here, the Wisconsin-born Nash Motors became the first company to offer seat belts in 1949.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah, I did think about that.
Yeah.
So it was more kind of like airplane seat belts just across the lap, which, I mean, yeah. But if you're like if you're a bigger person, though, like that's not... It's not going to really hold you.
No.
You know, but.
And like, I'm not trying to throw shade at people that are bigger sizes. Like, I get people are all shapes and stuff. But how exactly would the seatbelt go across their laps?
I don't know. That's a good question. They're driving. Nancy jokes about being followed by a car with dim headlights, but they actually are being followed. They get to the police station. And then they leave, and then Nancy's like, no, but really, we are being followed. And Carson watches, and yeah, it's just a lot. And then Nancy was freaking out about her flowers.
Oh, because Ned went through it because he was practicing his football tackle, and yeah, he broke Nancy's flowers.
Yeah, and then there are two other kids that were there, which I guess were just neighborhood kids, maybe,
I guess.
that were with him. And when he was like tackling the football dummy or whatever. But yeah, they were trampling all over the flowers and she was freaking out. And then one of the kids had this apparently injured pigeon. And so they were looking at the pigeon over and they realized that it was like a homing carrier pigeon or whatever that would carry messages. And it had like a little serial number on it. And so Nancy memorized the serial number to look it up later. And it had a message on it that had like a password, Bluebell. And it said shoulder. What did it say about the shoulder?
Something about, I don't remember what it said
Something
specifically.
about the shoulder, and then the password was Bluebells or Bluebell, something like that.
Did it bother you that, like, when Nancy chased those two, I guess, neighborhood kids away, didn't she
With a
grab
rake?
like a rake?
Yeah.
And she was like, literally got so mad right away. And she's like, get out of here, like, scram. And I'm like, that does not seem like Nancy at all.
No, that's not the Nancy we know.
Like, she's usually like pretty cool, like level-headed. Like, obviously she's gotten mad like sometimes, but like from 0 to 100 like that in like 2 seconds, like no.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird. She gathers all this information. She s tells Ted, hold on to this bird with your dear life. This is the most important thing right now. I gotta find out some information. And so she takes off. She leaves him in charge of being Mr. Mom to this pigeon. And she goes and sends a telegram to find out if this bird is actually registered, and it's not. They come back and they build like a little cage carrier kind of thing so they can take the pigeon to the police station. But then Nancy lets the pigeon escape.
She did all this stuff on purpose just to follow it.
Yeah, so. And of course, Ted's like, I don't know what's going on the whole time. And I'm just like, dude, you're here for the giggles. It's okay. Just go with it. It's fine. And then that was when he had brought the ladder out and banged up the car, and I cringed, and he fell and like practically knocked himself out, hitting his head against the like barn door or shed door or whatever it was. And so they're following this carrier pigeon and he keeps landing every once in a while. So they stop and then the bird would take off and then they'd stop and they lost it for a second and they're arguing back and forth. And that's when I say there's some tension there. There's a little flirty, you know,
Yeah.
but still not like the BFF kind of whatever kind of thing.
And it's Ted even was like, he see I even wrote in my notes, Ted seems like he can't wait to get Nancy out of his hair. The two of them never seem to get along.
No, never. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then they finally get sight of the bird again and they see it like circling around. So, like, okay, so this bird must be in familiar territory, close to where he roosts or something. So, finally lands on a house. They figure out where it's at, which I would never be able to do that. I'm just telling you right now, I can't read a map. I'm lost without GPS. If I was on a road and there was a bird that I'm trying to follow, like the bird's in the air and I'm trying to figure out like what road to take, it would never happen.
No.
Just point blank, would never happen.
Yeah.
She's got a much better sense of direction than I do. So they find this house where the bird goes in. They contact Nancy makes Ted stay.
And then he's like, what am I supposed to do? And she's like, well, round them up. I'm like, well, and he's like, what, just me? How am I supposed to round up all these guys? It's just me.
You're a football player. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You're fine. But then, That's fancy. I know.
And then didn't he say, like, what if these guys don't stay down like my dummy does? Or is that later?
Yes. I think that's when he said it. Yeah. And so she goes and contacts the police, and they take forever, and they finally come because it's like 30 miles away or something like that. And so I got so tickled when the police came because they were talking about their plan of how they were going to attack. And then the one blows the whistle and they all start running. And I started cracking up because it was so not organized and it was just sloppy and chaotic. And I was just like, okay, the guy that they end up getting is Mary's rude boy from earlier.
I think it was Captain Tweedy that blew the whistle.
Okay, well, that tracks because, you know, he's dumb.
Can I just call him Captain Tweedledum?
Yeah, I mean, that works because I don't like him, so.
Yeah, he was just kind of in his own world, I feel like, a lot of the time.
Pretty much, yeah. The guy's story was, you know, I rented this place. And I just moved in and I had to have a place to go for whenever Mary comes back into town. And I like the country.
That seems a whole lot of bull right there.
That's like the weakest story ever. But okay. Whatever you say, apparently.
Whatever floats your boat, I guess.
Yeah. And so this makes the police treat Nancy like a little girl even more. And Carson, too, for that matter.
Yeah.
So that's annoying. Yeah. So Nancy feels really down about that, which is understandable. But even Mark earlier was saying, when I first started watching it again tonight, he was like, I don't like that guy. I don't trust him. I'm like, I don't trust him either. He's sus. So we were right. He goes back in. He writes a note talking about how he essentially conned the police, told them everything was fine, told them about the Drews, you know, essentially interfering. You know, he's telling them, hey, they're on to us, but I've got it worked out. It's okay.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So.
Nancy went to go see Dr. Spires because he got beat up really bad.
He got beat up, which apparently is front page news. Which I guess it was a slow news day. Not saying that that's not important news, but.
But did it need to be the front page?
Big front page headline news?
Yeah. No.
I don't think so, but okay. So Nancy goes and sees him and gives him well wishes and stuff, you know. But he's, you know, in rough shape, but on the mend. He'll be okay. We're getting close to the end here.
Ted kind of figures out, he even says that, like, with the pigeon, it flies in, like, a straight line, you know? And so where they found the pigeon, where it got to Mrs. Eldridge's sketchy partner guy, they figured out that half of it. So they have to work backwards to figure the back half of the path. That's
right. Yeah, to find out where she's at. And then this is where, oh... This is where Ted comes in for the comedic relief and they dress him up as a nurse and Nancy has to dress up as a widow all in black.
Hello, Ted.
Yeah.
How are you?
Nurse Ted.
You know, I understand the thought process behind it. I do. But who did they think they were kidding?
Nobody, I don't think.
They were weak attempts at costumes. I truly do understand the thought process. And I feel like if they were older, it might have worked. But being younger, it's sus.
And even, like, in the book, I remember it was Nancy, Bess, and George. So they were actually able to get Mrs. Eldridge out of there without getting caught.
Yeah.
It was only Nancy that got caught. But now, it's all Nancy, Ted, and Mrs. Eldridge got caught.
They all got caught, yeah.
And there's no airplanes of any kind either in the movie.
Which, yeah, I forgot the airplane. They Yeah. Rented an airplane. Nancy essentially was like, I have $8. Give me your $2 because I need it, because apparently it's $10 to rent an airplane.
Only what? $10.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Whatever you say. Yeah. I'm interested to know if there's any way if we could find out why Bess and George were not in any of these movies.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe it was because of time. Maybe they didn't want to have three female leads. They just wanted to have one female lead. Maybe. I don't know. But I was kind of curious because I feel like that could have been interesting to see. Yeah. But yeah, they get caught. It looks a little rough for them all at the end, but kind of jumping ahead, I mean, the bad guys get caught. You know, it turns out Mary was being held against her will. She still wanted to give the money. Nancy, like you said to me in a private message, Nancy was kind of a wimp at the end and like cried and like fainted and all this. And I'm like, what is this? What is this? This is not Nancy.
No.
Nancy doesn't cry. Nancy doesn't faint.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
That was a very odd choice.
Yeah.
That's not like her personality at all. But I mean, I'll go back at what I said earlier in that, you know, at this point, it's still being shaped as a character. So, you know, it's still a work in progress at this point.
So I'm on with the regular Wikipedia page, and I'm on the Nancy Drew and the Hidden Staircase, the last film of these four movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, Nancy's boyfriend, Ned Nickerson, became Ted Nickerson, and Ned, in quotes, was considered too old-fashioned. The housekeeper, Hannah Gruen, was replaced by Effie Schneider, a minor character who had appeared in only a few of the Drews, in a few books, as the Drews' part-time maid in the films. Effie's traits are combined with Hannah's. Nancy's friends, George and Bess, were eliminated completely. In quotes, mystery elements were downplayed, plots simplified, and the romance spiced up. To promote the film, the Warner Bros., created a Nancy Drew fan club that included a set of rules such as must have a steady boyfriend in the sense of a pal and must take part in choosing own clothes. These rules were based on some research Warner Bros. Had done on the habits and attitudes of typical, it's in quotes, teenage girls.
What?
Like, that does not make sense to me.
Typical teenage girls of the 30s?
Like, what the heck?
That's weird.
And why is it that Ted was the one that actually thought of a way to send a message out by Morse code to get help, and Nancy didn't figure that out towards the end?
I don't know.
Because Nancy's usually the one to help figure that stuff out.
When was Morse code invented? 18.
And of course, at the end, Captain Tweety gives all the credit to Nancy because she was the one that figured this stuff out and whatever. I'm like, dude, she's trying to help you throughout the whole movie, like,
yeah.
Oh boy.
I don't know. He's a piece of work.
I did not expect Nancy to shoot the gun either, just saying.
Yeah, that was like Secrets Can Kill before Secrets Can Kill was even thought of.
Yeah.
But also I need to ask Mark about the accuracy of that, because I don't know what kind of gun that was. I need to show him that clip, because that seemed like an awful lot of shots that she shot. And I don't know if that was accurate or not, because I don't know how many bullets that gun can hold.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see if that's accurate. So I will show him that part, and I will report back to you, and I will let you know if that's accurate.
Alrighty.
Just out of curiosity. Little things like that I'm always interested in, because I feel like it's really easy to kind of just gloss over things like that. But, like, yeah. Like, you know how, like, for example, whenever we were watching the Nancy Drew TV show and they show, like, courtroom stuff and you ask me how, if, like, that's accurate. It's like, yeah. That.
Yeah.
Like, I look for things like that, like, things that I would know if it's accurate or not. I think that's interesting because it's like, do these people that are making these shows or movies or what have you, are they taking the time to do the research for accuracy? Because sometimes they do, but a lot of times they don't.
Yeah.
So it just kind of depends.
Yeah.
But either way, it's cool.
Yeah.
So. That's true. Yeah. So listeners, you know, if you're interested, like I said, these are available on YouTube to watch. Like I said, I suggest watching with an open mind. They are the definition of campy. I giggled through most of it, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. So,
yeah.
You know, just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what I have to say.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
It's pretty silly.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in a bad way. Just,
yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. If you have no other notes, things to say about this movie, which movie are we talking about next week?
Are we talking about Nancy Drew Reporter?
Yeah.
Okay, Nancy Drew Reporter. Because, you know, I pay attention and I know exactly what we're doing all the time.
Yeah.
Kidding, no I don't. Just kidding.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you for listening this week and we will see you next week.
Bye, guys. You can find us on Instagram at River Heights Buzz. You can email us at riverheightsbuzz@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group, the River Heights Buzz Podcast Central Buzz. And you can follow us on Twitter at River Heights Buzz with just one Z. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure to keep an eye out for our next episode.